Okay, good evening, everyone. If
Good
you take a
evening.
look in the chat, you'll see the sheet that we're referencing tonight. Again, it's tonight actually we're looking at a different sefer. We're looking at a tshuva from Rav Usher Weiss. Now, Rav Usher Weiss is actually a contemporary rabbi. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. He lives in Israel, but he's a very interesting personality because he kind of straddles the line between the
This is
more
not going to be
Haredi
helpful.
world and the kind of right-leaning YU world.
Where does
So
he hang out, as it were?
he hangs out more in the Haredi world. He's a rabbi of a town in, I think, a suburb of Yerushalayim or somewhere in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. But it's very interesting. But for a Haredi rabbi, I know we have these stereotypes in our minds that they're always, trying to be machmir, trying to be strict. But I think a lot of more modern Orthodox or YU-oriented rabbis kind of like him because he doesn't always lean towards the side of chumrah, the side of stringency out of habit, but he tends to have very clear and balanced tshuvos where you could go into a tshuva and you won't really know if he's going to come out being strict or lenient, where he's going to go. And generally, he tries to provide different sides of an argument. So he's a really great writer. Obviously, doesn't need my haskama, doesn't need my approbation. And he's been one of the rabbis. If I had to identify like the three main rabbis that we have been looking towards as poskim, as leaders during coronavirus, at least the YU community, we've been looking towards Rav Herschel Schechter. We've read Tshuvos from Rav Rimon, who also is a big Dat Yilumi, Religious Science Israeli rabbi, and Rav Usher Weiss. Rav Usher Weiss has been, and the OU brings him in all the time. Like, you see like these OU events with Rav Usher Weiss. So he's a very interesting figure that he's able to command respect in both worlds. You don't see that many of them who could do it successfully. But anyway, we're not going to see any of the anything of a political nature or of a sociological nature in his tshuva. But I always think it's important to give a little flavor as to who we're learning from, who we're reading from. And so again, as always, I recommend that if the sheet looks accessible to you, you're welcome to follow along with it. But again, it's supplementary, and you should be able to gain a lot from the shiur, regardless of whether you care to reference the sheet that I put in the chat. The sheet is his tshuva on the matter. So the question I want to explore this evening are two questions. Number one, let's say I am here in America. My kid, I sent him to Moshavah. I sent him to Bnei Akiva. They did a good job inculcating Zionism into his mind, and he decided to make Aliyah. Now he's living in Israel. He begrudgingly, comes back for Yom Tov, is at the table, and turns out that this kid is the youngest kid at the table out of all of my kids. So the question is, right, when I say Manishtana, sorry, not I say Mashal, right? If I'm leading the meal, if I'm leading the Seder, so usually, right, we turn to the youngest child and we ask them to say Manishtana. We try to beckon, we encourage them that the child should be asking questions. And so there seems to be this give and take, this conversation where child asks a question, parent gives a response, and that's how we fulfill the mitzvah of the Haggadah, by this give and take, this question and answer session that we have with the children. That's what we're doing throughout the course of the Seder. That should be nothing new to us. But the question is, so what happens, right? What happens when a person who lives in Israel spends Yom Tov here in America, spends holiday in America? What's going to happen?
They
And
don't
he
observe
said,
it.
what, Susan?
They don't observe it.
Well, they observe the first day, right?
Right,
They observe it, they get away with everything. But you are correct.
right.
Yes, I know what you meant. So Susan's saying that Israelis will not keep the second days since they are still residents of Israel, similar to how an American who is a resident of America goes to Israel for a holiday on a vacation, they still keep 2 days of Yom Tov.
It really
Now,
doesn't work.
what was that?
It really doesn't work.
Well, actually, or arguably, it really does work because then your Israeli hosts turn into your Shabbos guy. then they do everything
Well,
for
yeah, but it's
That's
so
basically what
wacky.
happens. So the question is, if I have an Israeli, my Israeli child, or not Israeli child, my child who made Aliyah and moved to Israel, come back for the Seder, I know this is probably not so as relevant this year, just based on everything you were sharing with us, Audrey, before about how flights are canceled and it's difficult to travel and coronavirus. But if the mitzvah is a partnership between me and my child, then what if my child, let's say it's the second night of Yom Tov, and my child is no longer obligated in the mitzvah of the Seder. It's Chol Moed for him already. But I, for me, as an American, as someone living in the diaspora, in Chutz Laaretz, it's still my night of Pesach, and I have an obligation to tell over Maggid, to tell over the story of the Exodus of Egypt. So the question is, can I fulfill my mitzvah of telling over the Exodus of Egypt, doing Maggid, the questions and answers, if my child is what we term is not a bar chiyuva, if he is not obligated to be here in this Suda?
He'd probably run off to a movie, which raises the question of what do you do if you're...
He's probably not going to bother being there for the second night, right?
That's right. No, but which raises the question of can you have, what for those of us who are alone and have to be our own storyteller and ask our own questions?
Good. So, but Susan, I like what you're raising conceptually, which is it's a difficult year. I mean, I don't want to minimize that at all. Some of us will be at Sedarim, you know, either with a spouse or on our own, and it can be a very minimalistic Seder this year and very daunting. So the question is, right, if I'm just finding myself, you know, I'm eating the Seder meal on my own, or I don't have any kids at the table with me, I could compound the question even further. However do I fulfill my mitzvah if there isn't someone else at the table who can ask the questions to me, right? So that's all within this question. But let me ask you, do you think, who has the mitzvah of Maggid? Who has the mitzvah of telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus of Egypt? Whose obligation is it? All right, let's draw a picture. We have a father, a mother, a daughter, son. Who here at the table is obligated?
Isn't it the father?
The father, okay.
The leader of the Seder?
Or I was going to say the oldest person there, if there's a grandparent.
I think everybody has the obligation.
Phyllis takes the egalitarian approach and says everyone is obligated. Okay.
Everyone should be part of Maggid.
Yes.
Okay. Everyone should be part of Maggid. But the question is, whose mitzvah is being fulfilled here? Now, this is the question I want to raise. Is the child in this
adults?
What was that,
I think adults.
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 Adults, but not the
kids.
Yeah. So here's the question. You know, is the kid here, is he here because he has a mitzvah also of Maggid? The child has his own mitzvah to take part of? Or is it that the child is kind of just a prop? He's a tool for me to fulfill my mitzvah of Maggid, my mitzvah of telling over the Haggadah, by using him to ask questions for me, right?
Yeah, it says he got a Televincha.
Or is he a means to an end?
It says he got a Televincha.
Ah, very good, Phyllis. So now what are you inferring from it saying he got a Televincha, and you should tell your son, you should tell your children?
Tells your children.
Yeah. What are you inferring from there?
Then it's the father who has to tell.
Very good. Very good inference. So good. We will get to Phyllis's point momentarily. So, but before we jump into this, there's one other point that I want to address, which is the second half of the tshuva, which is, are women obligated in the mitzvah of the Haggadah? So that is going to be subject to a debate as well. We know women are obligated to drink the dal of kosos, to drink the four glasses of wine. There's a question, right? And that's how we have the whole question. Should they lean in the presence of their husbands? And then what are we told? Well, if a woman is considered an Isha Chashuva, she's an important woman, then she can recline in the presence of her husband. It's not disrespectful. And as you can imagine, all women recline today because If their husbands don't let them recline, well, you know, they're sleeping on the couch tonight, basically. So every woman,
they deserve to recline after all the work that they have to do.
Oh, not that's the men, right.
They have to do.
You know what? I'll take it, Audrey. If I don't have to do any work and Marissa gets to recline, you know what? It's a good deal for me. I'm just kidding. Marissa actually just sent me a whole list. You know, I was there waiting to give out matzahs tonight, right before I ran over to give the shiur. And so I was at the shul and I was like, you know, responding to messages. I see a text from Marissa. Here is a list of everything we need to do for a Yom Tov. Kosher this, replace that, clean out that. I'm like, oh, looks like a nice list, honey. Very creative.
Rats a ruck, right?
What was that?
Rats a ruck.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, but
I'm sorry, I have a question. Shouldn't the women not be obligated in some way because they're not obligated in mitzvot shehazman grama? And right. Isn't there an issue in the Seder and, you know, with the timing, with the kosot, with the whatever there is, you know?
Exactly. So Phyllis brings up our age old principle whenever it comes to distinctions between the genders, when it comes to filling mitzvos. The classic distinction between a man and a woman is that women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvos. So the question is here, is this going to be an exception to that rule? And yes, we will review why there might be exceptions to that rule. So here we go. That's what we're talking about. Number one, children who are not obligated in the Seder. And number two, if women are obligated. So first, we'll deal with children. And of course, we'll get to, you know one of the jokes I like saying, Olton, not joke really, but my observation. Any halachic topic automatically becomes a hot topic, becomes a controversial topic, as long as you say, are women obligated in this mitzvah? You know, it's like almost like a low-hanging fruit. It's like a cheap shot. If someone wants to teach like a hot topic class, you just you talk about anything like Bikurim, you know, first fruits, are women obligated? You know, you just append that to any class.
Sorry.
That's like a cheap shot there. But we will deal with it very soon. Okay. So if you're looking on page number one, he references in the second paragraph the Mishnah in Pesachim Akuf Tezayin Amid Aleph, which says, "Im ein lo ben ishto shel alto." So if someone, let's say it's just a man and a woman, a husband and wife who are eating together the Seder, and there is no child. So then the wife asks the husband the questions. And what seems to be here is actually a whole list of precedents of who gets to ask. And if this person isn't there, this person takes their place. The Seder of Kadima is Da Ben Shoel, Ben Ainlo Ben Isho Shoeles. If there's no son, then his wife will ask him questions. Ben Ainlo Isha, if there's no wife, Talmud Chacham Shom Zezeh. If they're just a bunch of rabbis who are having the Seder together, they'll ask each other the questions. And if you
wait, Rabbi, wife doesn't come before a daughter, right?
Wife does, yeah. You know, it's interesting. It doesn't actually mention daughter, but I think
I was going to say, where's first. The daughter?
No.
Right. So it doesn't say daughter. I think when it says Ben, it would include daughter as well. But that's a good observation. It just skips from son to wife right away.
Right.
But I think daughter would come before wife. Now, okay. So now if you look in the paragraph on the left side, it starts with the word ulugufan. As you can see, I have double underlines in there, which means it's a very important principle. The question is, when we're talking about the mitzvah of Magid, the mitzvah of the Haggadah, the mitzvah of telling over the story of the exodus of Egypt, we don't only ask whose obligation it is, but what exactly is the obligation being fulfilled? So if you look in that paragraph, he gives two obligations. U'sheyesh lo ben, when someone has a child with him, Shnei din yesh kan. There are two mitzvos. There are two things that he's fulfilling by doing this question and answer session with his son. Number one, etzem mitzvah hasipor. Number one is the telling over of the Seder, of the story of the Seder, the story of the exodus of Egypt. And number two, a completely independent but also, I guess not completely, but connected as well, is by mitzvah lahanchil libno leben bino esipura shel yitzias mitzrayim vesisoto samuna bahavas Hashem. And then number two is another mitzvah being fulfilled, which is bequeathing the mesorah, the tradition, to one's child. So there's actually two things going on over here. Number one, there's a general overarching mitzvah of telling over the story of the exodus of Egypt. And number two, there's a more precise mitzvah of specifically telling the story to one's child in order that they basically pass on the Mesorah, they pass on the Jewish tradition to their child, which is why, by the way, one of my other favorite lines I always like saying is that, so as you know, it's near Pesach time, and in some communities, rabbis will get up, and during their sermons, they will bash Pesach programs. Now, you're probably not hearing it as much this year because not many Pesach programs. I don't know what the history with our shul is, but a lot of shuls I went to growing up, the rabbis would always get up on Shabbos and say, people waste their time going to Pesach programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So two things. Number one, my theory is every rabbi is opposed to Pesach programs until they get invited as a scholar in residence on one.
That's right.
So that's why I will refrain from bashing Pesach programs on the off chance that hopefully one day, maybe I'll strike gold and make it big. So I don't want to, you know, have a recording right now of me contradicting myself years down the line, kind of like what you do to politicians. They dig up something.
Very prudent.
Yes. Thank you, Susan. You know, my one in a million chance of seeing striking gold there. The second is there actually are some rabbis who are exceptions to this rule and are consistent. One of them is one of my rabbeim, Rav Sobolovsky from YU. Now, Rav Sobolovsky can easily get invited on a Pesach program, and I'm sure he's already been invited numerous times, like YU-oriented Pesach programs. But he doesn't go. And so when rabbis criticize going on Pesach programs, they each have their own reasons. For instance, Rabbi Weider, also consistent. He's at YU as well. Easily get invited on a Pesach program. Sure. Easily. I'm sure he has been already. But he doesn't go on one because he says his sheet, his opinion is that people are spending exorbitant amounts of money on these vacations. They should really go towards helping people with school tuition, et cetera, et cetera. That's his approach. Rosoblowski's approach, which is relevant for what we're talking about, is that, you know, in diaspora, okay, it's two nights. But really, out of all the days of the year, out of all the different events that take place in the Jewish calendar, there is one night that God designated for us to pass on our Mesorah, to inculcate our values and our Jewish people's story into the minds and hearts of the next generation. And it's Dafka that night that you're going to leave your house, go to some Pesach program, gorge on old whatever. I haven't actually been on one for Pesach Seder, so you have to tell me. Go on those programs and where everyone's shouting and yelling. Is that the environment that you want to take that one night to share the Mesorah and the story of the Jewish people with your children? So again, I think
I'm going to say something in favor of them.
If I could just finish the point.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily endorsing or disagreeing. I don't care to take a position on that, as I already said before. But what's relevant here is that what Rosobolevsky, I think, is referring to is Seder night is not just about telling over a story, but it's also about passing on the Mesorah to our children, the tradition to our children. And that is an important part we don't necessarily think about as much. It's not just about telling over Maggid by leaning right through it, but there's a mitzvah, a separate mitzvah, which I happen to fulfill at the same time, of inculcating our tradition into the minds and hearts of our children. So that was his argument based on this separate independent mitzvah that we could coincidentally fulfill at the same time. All right. I don't want to get too off topic on Pesach programs. I brought it in just as a supplementary point, but Susan, yes, in defense of
Pesach. Well, no, I just want to say I saw many families get together who otherwise would not have been able to do so, or it was convenient maybe for people who couldn't have traveled or something like that. And so they were able to be with their families in a major way on this significant occasion.
Absolutely. There's definitely merits to doing it. And again, I'm not here to take a position for or against, but it was interesting. You know, again, you pay attention to the people who are against these things, listen to what their arguments are as to why they're against it. Rose Sobolowski, usually I hear people talk about how they say it's, you know, just an obscene amount of money and hedonism. And like, those are the arguments that I hear against it. Rose Sobolowski's approach was at least one that was unique to me. And I thought was actually very true to the particular mitzvah that we're trying to fulfill, which is, if you know Rose Sobolowski, that's very much his kind of mindset, that he would look at this through a halachic lens.
But nobody should be going on a Pesach program if they've never had to go through changing dishes.
Oh, yeah. So that was a funny thing also. So Rav Schachter's tshuva last year, I think he was originally, if I'm remembering the exact thing, I think he was originally opposed to koshering plastic, but then he was okay with it because so many people couldn't go on Pesach program, so he kosher for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, just thinking to myself, I'm like, so it's a shas ad chak this year. It's a difficult situation that people can't go on Pesach programs, you know, but what about all of us people who don't go on Pesach programs every single year? You know, like, why wasn't it a shas ad chak for us beforehand? You know, that we're at home. We only have Rachmanis when people can't go on. So, okay. You know what? Akan Dvar, I'll end it over here.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving forward. So, now what we see from here, so even in the mitzvah, now the question is, according to the first mitzvah, if I don't have a child, why am I doing the question and answering? Now, if my children aren't around, why do I still have my wife or have my friend or colleague or brother ask me questions? Because there, it's not fulfillment in Vigadta Levincha, as Phyllis mentioned earlier, of inculcating the tradition into the minds and hearts of our children, but rather it's only fulfilling the general mitzvah of the Haggadah, of telling over the story. And it happens to be, how do you tell over a story? Rabbi said, best way to do it is through questions and answers. But you only fulfill the second mitzvah of inculcating the Mesorah when you have your children at the table. Therefore, based on all of this, comes along Rav Usher Weiss and says as follows. Remember, we asked, can a father fulfill his obligation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling over the story of the Exodus, if his child is not obligated to sit at the Seder at night? For instance, either A, he's coming from Israel where he's not obligated in second night, or B, another possibility I didn't give you yet, which is he's too young. He's not at the stage of chinuch yet. He's like younger than 6 years old, where there isn't even a mitzvah to educate him yet. At a certain age, like let's say Gil Chinuch is like around 6-7 years old, that's when we have a mitzvah to actually teach our kids proper chinuch. There's no halachic obligation beforehand. So the question is, have I fulfilled my obligation of telling over the story of the Exodus of Egypt if my kid is not obligated to be asking questions? What do we think?
You mean to Vigad Halabincha, that one?
So Zuck Phyllis, as follows, that it depends which mitzvah we're talking about. Maybe the Vigadata Levincha, maybe I'm fulfilling it, maybe I'm not. You see, maybe because on the one hand, maybe this kid isn't obligated, but really, it doesn't matter if he's obligated in midst of the Seder. The point is to pass on Masorah to children. And whether this child is obligated in mitzvah right now, that doesn't matter, because that doesn't impact my obligation to educate him. Also,
there are people who have no children.
Right. So even if one wants to make the argument, or it's a circumstance where there are no children, don't forget, Yadda Vincha is an independent mitzvah from the general mitzvah of telling over the story of the Exodus of Egypt, of the Haggadah. So it happens to be we fulfill both at the same time. But if there's no children present, don't forget, by you just talking to someone else at the table, or even talking to yourself and asking us questions and answers, by reading Manashana to yourself, you actually are still fulfilling the general mitzvah of the Haggadah, even absent having children or someone else there to bounce those questions off you. That's the point that he makes. Okay, we're going to move on to talk about women's obligation in the Seder, But let me just pause. Does anyone have any remarks or questions to add to this section before we move forward? Other than about Pesach programs. Okay. You see, I feel like I should have taken like a, like, you know, everyone should raise their hands. Tell me who's Pesach program, who's not, you know, what side you're on. We should take a poll. Okay. So for those following, we are in section Gimel on the bottom of the second page, Kuf Mem Hey. And the question is basically as follows. Are women obligated in the mitzvah of the Haggadah, the mitzvah of Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the telling, the retelling of the story of the exodus of Egypt? Give me arguments pro and con. Who wants to argue con?
Yes, the women were involved. The women were involved in the mitzvah. They, because of the women, Bnei Yisrael were saved. If not for Miriam encouraging her parents to remarry from the very start, and then the women took out the jewelry, you know, the women took out the drums and the whatever symbols to dance, blah blah blah, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Also, by the way, women play an important role because what happened was, the men didn't want to procreate either because, you know, they're coming back from a long day of work, they're very tired, or simply they said, look, what's the point of having children if Pharaoh's going to come after them? Mm-hmm. But it was the women who encouraged their husbands to be intimate with them and to procreate. And if it weren't for their initiative, there would be no next generation of Jewish people. So that's why we grind the apple in. That's
and Yocheved and Tzipora. All that,
yeah, know. Lots of important women in the story. So we're going to get to that argument soon, which is Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes, that they were involved in the same miracle. We have that idea when it comes to Megillah also. Why are women obligated here the Megillah? Mm-hmm. Similar idea, Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes. But actually, you know, let's just jump to it now. It's actually section Dalet, Phyllis, what you're bringing up. So again, just to summarize what Phyllis suggested, which is really, we always assume that women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvahs, and men are obligated in time-bound mitzvahs. So women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvahs. So basically every holiday is inherently a time-bound mitzvah.
Right.
Women aren't obligated to sing the sukkah. Well, why not? That's important. Well, they're allowed to, of course. They can fulfill a mitzvah, but they don't have to do it because it is time-bound in nature, which works out because for married men, you could get a dispensation from sleeping in the sukkah. Because if your wife is in the house, you're expected to be with her. So that actually gets you out of sleeping in the sukkah. So now I don't feel so guilty anymore because I use Marissa as my excuse. I'm like, Marissa, you know, I wouldn't want to make you sleep in the sukkah, you know, like even if she wants to pressure to stay in the house. So then I get to come along as well. So we assume that. But sometimes there are exceptions to the rule. One such exception is we just had for Purim. Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes, women were also saved in the same miracle. So the question is, can we apply the same logic here that, well, women were saved and actually involved in the miracles and bringing about the triumph and continuity of the Jewish people? So maybe women should be obligated as well. And women are actually obligated in drinking the four cups of wine. But are they obligated in Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, in telling over the story of the exodus of Egypt? So the thing is, this concept, this principle of saying, Avhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes, that women were also involved in bringing about the redemption, it might not work over here. Now, can anyone tell me what's different about the nature of the mitzvah of Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling over the story of Egypt, and the nature of the origin of the mitzvah of Megillah, why I might distinguish between the two of them? Megillah was instituted from the Torah or from the rabbis?
Rabbis.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, of course, it's mentioned in Esther itself, but basically we treat it as a mitzvah midrabbanan. It's a rabbinical mitzvah. This svara, Tosus says, only works for rabbinical mitzvahs. Now, when the rabbis institute additional mitzvahs, they could say, you know what, we'll throw women along in as well, along with the men. But when it comes to a biblical mitzvah needs to operate off the same principles of time-bound mitzvahs. So sukkah is a biblical mitzvah. The Pesach Seder, telling over the story, is a biblical mitzvah. But when it comes to rabbinically oriented ones, like the four kosos, for instance, drinking the four cups of wine, and the obligation of listening to the Megillah, those are rabbinical, and that's why the rabbis who institute it, they can institute it for everybody. But if something comes from the Torah, it's very much limited. So that's part of the argument over here. Does that make sense? That's part of the argument.
How about the fact that the four cups are based on Torah, you know, about Seiti, Vitzalti, that stuff? Or that's
so
just
so you're right. The symbolism is inspired from the Torah. You know what we call that? It's called an esmachta. Esmachta, it's different understandings what esmachta means. But what esmachta means is that the rabbis basically instituted something, and they found psukim in the Torah. They found verses that supported, or rather, they were inspired by certain ideas they saw in the Torah, and they used those ideas as a basis for creating rabbinic mitzvos, for creating rabbinical level mitzvos. So you're right; it's taken after the symbolism of God's different statements of redemption, but it's not biblical in terms of its origin of obligation. That's important to keep in mind. So, okay. One other thing that I wanted to share, or actually, you know, we should do in our tshuva class, we should do Rav Moshe Feinstein, remind me, you know, put this on the docket. Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva on why women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvahs. I feel like this is one of those things you can only say in the Monday night shir, but you can't say from the pulpit as a sermon on Shabbos morning. We didn't do this tshuva together, did we? So does anyone want to venture a guess as to what Rav Moshe Feinstein says? Why men are obligated in time-bound mitzvahs and women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvahs? I see Toby unmuting.
Because women don't need the mitzvahs.
Yeah.
What do you mean they don't need mitzvahs?
Because our souls are already so far perfected that we don't require.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein.
To do things.
Yay, Toby.
So
we can do things on more like when we have time, when we're ready, because we're
women
already
are better at multitasking.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you're already so holy, right? That one? That's what you're referring to?
Yep.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein thankfully does not go down that route. Instead of Rav Moshe Feinstein resorting to what seems kind of like apologetics, if you'll excuse me, is he actually just says it probably how it is. Anyone else want to venture a guess as to what the reasoning is? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, and it makes a lot of sense. Whether you like it or not is another story, but it makes a lot of sense conceptually, which is that if both men and women had to be showing up, let's say, to Minyan every day, who is going to be home to watch the kids? Because the Torah expects a patriarchal society where women have to take care of the children and are, you know, as Audrey said before, cleaning the house for Pesach, then it's not fair to also impose on them all of these time-bound mitzvos, which will conflict with their general homebound obligations that they already have. So that's the essential gist of what Moshe Feinstein says. And, you know, I mean, that probably is the reason. I mean, it seems compelling. Whether one likes the reason or not is another story, but that certainly seems like probably what the rabbis and what the Torah had in mind. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I had a question that was brought, not a question, someone made a statement to me, which was that and maybe some of you can relate to this. The woman said to me, if I can't go to shul, my husband shouldn't go to shul either. until both of us could go to shul, neither of us are going to shul. What do you make of that?
That's
not like a compelling policy.
Not fair.
Wants him home.
Wants him home. So it's interesting is part of the reason is because someone has kids. We, you know, thankfully we have a 7 to 9 o'clock meeting where people could actually go in between. There's, I think the Shilowitzes, for instance, Rachel goes to 7 o'clock. I see her there. And then she goes home and then Daniel comes to 9 o'clock. So we actually do have things worked out.
That was one of the arguments for the 6 a.m. Rosh Hashanah minyan.
Oh, okay. So, okay, I didn't even realize that. But the interesting thing is, in an ideal world, both spouses get to go to minyan. But actually, you know, again, whether you like it or not, this does seem to be the intent of the halacha, which is we know there will be a conflict at some point. There will be a day where there isn't youth programming at shul to so both parents can be off duty. So someone has to make the decision. And so what God did was he basically made the decision and said, all right, you go to shul, you stay at home. So that seems to be the reasoning behind it. Anyway, I digress a little bit.
Nothing to do anyway. He would be sitting around at home while the woman was doing all the work. So he belongs.
He was helping to take care of the kids.
Well, doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes. Marissa's not listening into any of this. I think.
Rabbi, you do your own thing and you don't listen to so many opinions.
She would never say that anyway.
All right. So one more idea I wanted to share. One more question for all of you. This one's an easier one. Are women obligated in Kiddush on Shabbos?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Audrey, I know you're in our Halacha WhatsApp group, but this was one of our first ones that we did. So maybe you probably came in a little later. In our Pnei Halacha WhatsApp group, the first halachas we did were Kiddush. And actually, we're about to finish cooking on Shabbos, or not cooking on Shabbos, rather. And we're about to move on to talking about the laws of meals on Shabbos, Suda Shabbos, and Shalosh Shudas, Malava Malka, and then Havdalah. Lots of fun stuff. You're all welcome to join if you want to. And the halacha that we first dealt with was Kiddush. That was the first section we went through. And we learned that women are actually obligated in Kiddush the same way men are. Wait a minute, isn't it a time-bound mitzvah? Why are women obligated in Kiddush? Anyone know?
It's not a specific.
They were also created.
At
the same time, man was created.
Well, oh, it's at home. You can do it at home.
A lot of
you don't need a minion.
Zecher l'maaseh.
You don't need a minion.
Minion.
Right, and there's no exact like time limit that it has to be by a certain time.
I mean, you have to have it by the end of the night. You have from the beginning of Shabbos until, well, I mean, technically you have throughout Shabbos to do it. You know, you do during the day if you miss it, but basically Shabbos is your time limit. You have to get it in on Shabbos.
Well, same with Sukkah. I'll tell you the answer. Sukkah also, you can go at any time you want, not at a particular time.
The obligation of Sukkah is only on the first night. That's what we learned last week, right?
Yeah.
Now you have a mitzvah.
But there's not a time there
during the rest of the week. So I'll share it with you. The idea is that those who are obligated in Shamor are obligated in Zachor. We learn the rabbis derive that, women are obligated in the prohibitions on Shabbos, right? The patur, the exemption from time-bound mitzvos, only relates to positive mitzvos. But women, the same way men are not allowed to perform the 39 malachos, women can't perform 39 malachos. And we learn, Shamor v'zachor v'dibor echad, we say all the time, that the mitzvah of Shamor, safeguarding the Shabbos, and Zachor, the positive, the remembering, of the commemoration of Shabbos, go hand in hand. So the same way women are obligated in the prohibitions, the negative aspects of Shabbos, they say, well, why should we only include you in all the negative things? Let's give you the positive also. So they get the positive mitzvos of Kiddush as well. So what Rav Asher Weiss suggests is it's possible that when it comes to Pesach, we could say the same thing. V'nir duhuadim benito didon, d'mash amru kosha yeshno b'bal toch al chomet, Yeshno bakum acho matzah. So we say, the Gemara tells us, that all who are prohibited from eating chametz on Pesach, those same people are also obligated to eat matzah on Pesach. Those who are not allowed to perform the negative action of eating chametz are also enjoined to eat and do the positive action of eating matzah. And so he suggests, Bechlau zeh, kol chiyu bePesach, v'ashava hishra ha-kazot isha le'ish, bechol mitzos ha-shulchaga matzos, u'bechol ha-mitzos zod sivrit yisus ha-tzayim. It's possible to suggest that when we equate the obligation in negative mitzvos to then obligate me in positive mitzvos, it doesn't mean literally just the mitzvah of matzah, but if I am obligated in the negative aspects, I'm obligated in all the positive aspects that come as well. Matzah is the icon we always think of. But just like a woman is obligated in matzah, a woman would also be obligated in the telling over of the story of Egypt. And so it's very similar, actually, to Kiddush. It's a full package deal. We don't want to just give you the negative experience. We don't want to just give you the experience of don't do this, don't do that. But we also, it'd be a shame. So we want you to remember also the positive aspects of as well of doing Kiddush and on Pesach, not just of the rabbinical dalakos, the four cups of wine, but we should be able to celebrate by eating the matzahs, telling over the story together. That is a mitzvah that every person, man and woman and child, all share in the Seder. Okay, that concludes the ideas I want to share from Rav Asher Weiss. But does anyone else have any other thoughts, questions, or remarks? Okay, well, I hope this helps us conceptualize the Seder as we go in. And of course, Rabbi Cohen and I, we have a question and answer WhatsApp group where people post halachic questions that come up. So if you don't know it exists yet, now you know. If you don't know, now you know. And you can post halachic questions in there. And it's a great way to just ask Rabbi Cohen and myself questions that you may be thinking of. And it's a great way to help everyone else in the community, because when they see your question, they see our answer, that might be helpful for them as well. So we are here for you to help you prepare for Pesach. Always feel free to email me and reach out if I could be of help with anything else. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.